Welcome to Everyday Wellness Podcast. I'm your host, nurse practitioner Cynthia Thurlow. This podcast is designed to educate, empower, and inspire you to achieve your health and wellness goals. My goal and intent is to provide you with the best content and conversations from leaders in the health and wellness industry each week and impact over a million lives. Today, I had the honor of recording the first of two episodes with Dr. Tabitha Barber. She's a triple board certified OBGYN specializing in perimenopause, menopause, and functional medicine. She's also known as the gutsy gynecologist, and she's one of my favorite women in the health and wellness space. In this first episode, we talked a great deal about perimenopause, the role of lifestyle management navigating this middle age transition, the impact of the use of oral contraceptives, the role of informed consent, the impact on our gut microbiome, vitamin and mineral depletion, as well as the use of typical therapies in middle age, including IUDs, ablations, and hysterectomies, how we can navigate cycle mapping during this time, and how to integrate intermittent fasting into perimenopause successfully. We also briefly touched on vasomotor symptoms and how to best manage them. I know you will find this podcast invaluable, and we recorded a second one immediately after, which we will share later this summer. Well, today is the first of two parts of my discussion with Dr. Tabitha Barber. She's an OBGYN, and she is affectionately referred to and has a wonderful podcast called The Gutsy Gynecologist. So welcome, Tabitha.
Thank you so much for having me, Cynthia. We need to talk about all of this stuff.
I agree. So what during your training or when you decided to go to medical school, what got you so passionate about helping support women throughout their lifetime? Because I think about you as a GYN that is really thinking from, you know, when we start menstruating all the way through menopause, you're not focused on one particular age group. You really do think about women on a continuum.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So I was going to be a rock star when I grew up. I thought I was going to marry Tommy Lee from Motley Crue. And like, I had the craziest idea of how life was going to play out. I had no interest in school or any of that, but I got pregnant in 11th grade and that shifted my entire life. And I realize now that was, you know, God's plan for me. But what I had a traumatic experience. I was on Medicaid and food stamps, and I was treated like a second class citizen. I had a doctor assigned to me who was nearing retirement. It was some family practice doctor who did not want to take Medicaid, but it was required. So I was one of those patients, and nothing was explained to me. Things were done to me that I, you know, many years later said, oh my God, what the heck? And that experience changed me. It opened my eyes to the fact that women don't have a voice and a choice in their health, and that we need advocates. We need people in those roles as physicians and nurses and administrators to actually think about those women and stick up for them and do what's right for them. So that really shifted me, and I ended up going back to get my GED. I went to a community college. I figured out how to get good grades. It's amazing what you do when you try. And I went to medical school. Like, that was my sole purpose, was I was going to be a women's health physician. I didn't know even what that looked like. You know, I came from a small town. We didn't even have gynecologists. So it all evolved, but I knew my purpose the whole way through. And here I am out in practice. You know, I do all this hard work for 10, 15 years or whatever, and I finally become a physician, and it's such an amazing feat. But then I'm stuck in this broken system, and I'm cranking patients out, you know, like it's a factory every 15 to 20 minutes, and no one's really getting better. You know, my saving grace was delivering babies was an amazing experience, and women were so grateful. And you know, I got so much praise for that. And I love seeing the babies out and about around town. But when it came to my women, my gynecology patients, I wasn't getting any success. I wasn't helping them feel better. It was always, what pill can I find for them next? What surgery can I do next? And so it felt very disheartening. And you know, I reached my breaking point when I finally had burnout. And I thought, I know God put me on this plan for a reason. I'm supposed to be changing women's life, but here I am stuck in a broken system. There's something missing. And what was missing was health and wellness. Like, I was focused on ill and disease and just looking at life the wrong way and not helping my patients. And so I had to make real big, scary, brave shifts in my life. And now I actually help women feel better and they heal themselves and it's transformational and they get their life back and all of these amazing things. And that's why I became a doctor, you know? So I heard Sachin Patel the other day saying something like, the medical system doesn't see you until you're sick, until you have a diagnosis and you are needing them. And then you get stuck there and you never get well again. So I want to help women not get to that point, or if they are at that point, get out of it. You know, like, I'm not in the business of keeping you feeling crappy. And so what I've come to understand is, like, we have these women who are done having children and there's no help for them. You know, they're age like 35 to 45 and up. And they're seeking answers and their doctors just don't have any. So let's talk about that today. Like, why don't doctors have those answers, right?
Well, I think it's so important. And I have to really credit your life's journey as what has pivoted you to, you know, really become this tremendous women's advocate. You know, I always talk about the path less traveled, and certainly you've had an incredible path. And I'm so, so grateful that not only that we are friends and we are clinicians, but that you are one of many that are speaking out on behalf of middle-aged women, because I am the first person to say very transparently that when I hit the wall of perimenopause, which I did, I was not anticipating the changes that I was going to be experiencing. And just by pure happenstance, on the day that I was seeing my annual GYN and we had a good working relationship, I just happened to have my menstrual cycle started that day. And I'd been telling her my period was very heavy. And her first response wasn't, let's look at some other things. It was, let's fix this problem. We'll put you on oral contraceptives. We'll give you an IUD. If you don't want that, an ablation, or, you know, best case scenario, we just take your uterus out.
Yes.
And I was like, time out. This is not an option. And I think for so many women, like, my mom never talked to me about these changes. My grandmother didn't. My girlfriends haven't. I've actually been the one that has encouraged them to talk about it. I said, I think there's so much shame in the aging process, and we need to give ourselves compassion, and we need to find the right providers to work with, because we are out there. You don't have to ascribe to the philosophy or the methodology that, you know, your best years are behind you and now you just have to accept things as they are. So when I was doing a little bit of research prior to our discussion, I was really looking into statistics on perimenopause, which there aren't a lot of them, which is unfortunate. But we do know, you know, statistically that 1.3 million women per year go into menopause. So that's 12 months without a menstrual cycle. But preceding that is perimenopause, this 5 to 10 year process. And what's interesting to me is that a lot of us, it's almost like we fall off a cliff. You know, we don't realize that our ovaries are starting to produce less progesterone, which impacts our sleep quality. And if we're prone to anxiety or depression, that we then, you know, evolve into having this relative estrogen dominance where we get these crazy heavy periods. I used to pray I would not start my cycle in the hospital because there was not enough equipment, supplies, et cetera. Even the nurses, I mean, they would know. I would look this panicked look. I was like, oh my goodness. So on a lot of levels, I think let's start the conversation. Let's talk about what's happening physiologically to our bodies as we are, you know, getting beyond the years, we're at peak fertility. What are the things that are changing in our bodies? And, you know, really focusing in on what are ways that we can test? Like, this is the question I get asked a lot, which I know we'll touch on, but how do I know? Like, how do I know this is happening? What are the things I need to be asking my GYN or my midwife or my NP or PA, whomever you see? What are the things I need to do to prepare for this time period?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, we have a lot to unpack. So your situation was pretty typical. You went to the doctor, you have the symptom of the heavy period or the estrogen dominance, and they want to fix it for you. You know, that's how we are trained. And, you know, here's a kicker, which a lot of women are shocked by. Gynecologists are actually surgeons. Mm-hmm. They are not hormone experts. I came out of residency barely understanding menopause. You know, I was taught perimenopause was this 3 to 5 year scenario of hot flashes, night sweats, mood swings. You put them on estrogen and they're good to go. That is literally what I learned. And that was 20 years ago. And then the Women's Health Initiative study came out and scared the bejesus out of everybody. And everybody got taken off their hormones and were told, just deal with it. So now, fast forward 20 years later, we're seeing perimenopause symptoms starting 10 or 15 years before you stop having that period altogether. And so we really need to look at that and go, why? The reasons are we are living crazy stressed out lives that we never have in any time in previous history as women. We are trying to do it all, be it all, have it all. You know, we're trying to look good and stay in shape and run businesses or have successful jobs and start our families and run our families. And we're starting our families later. And all of that chronic cortisol production to manage all of that really causes an imbalance in our sex hormones. So that is number one. Number two is that we don't love on our liver. We abuse our liver. We drink alcohol on a regular basis now, like we never have as women in the past, you know, especially the past couple of years, you know, we have been going to grab that glass of wine to handle those stressors or to handle that pandemic stress and anxiety. And when you're drinking alcohol every night and then you're taking Benadryl to help you sleep or Ambien and Ativan and all of these drugs, it's really stressful on the liver. And then there's the impact of our food. Our food is pretty much garbage in this society. I hate to say it, but I call it Frankenfood. It's not real food if you're eating out of boxes and bags. And so that's really hard on our liver as well. And then the other piece of it is that, you know, our gut microbiome. This is where I'm really passionate about. Gynecologists do not understand the association of gut health and gyne health. So your microbiome actually helps determine if you get rid of those used up estrogens and hormones, or if you recirculate them and reabsorb them. So your scenario of, my periods are getting a little heavier, that was a sign from your body that you were getting too much estrogen. And so that can happen from chronic cortisol production, depleting your progesterone. It can happen from your liver not metabolizing your estrogens properly. It can happen because you're constipated and not pooping regularly, or you have the wrong bacteria living in your gut causing you to reabsorb those estrogens. And none of that is evaluated by conventional gynecologists. It's very much a Band-Aid approach. Let's get rid of that heavy period. So what I finally found after, you know, practicing forever and seeing these patients just having this recurring scenario is that you get rid of that symptom. I did a lot of hysterectomies and a lot of ablations and a lot of IUDs. Mm-hmm. A few years later, they would get diagnosed with breast cancer. And I stopped and I said, why? Why? You know, and the problem is we didn't fix the hormone imbalance. So the estrogen continued to dominate, the progesterone continued to be low and not be balancing and protecting that estrogen. And you continued to not metabolize your estrogens effectively in the liver. And so that is a scenario that I see all too commonly. And I want conventional gynecologists to acknowledge this problem because they're actually contributing to it by covering up your symptoms, because it makes it easier to ignore this hormone imbalance.
Americans spend an average of 90% of their time indoors and take about 20,000 breaths a day. The indoor air that we breathe is 2 to 5 times more polluted than outdoor air. and in some circumstances, up to 100 times more polluted, according to the EPA. And did you know that air pollution is responsible for nearly 7 million premature deaths globally? So what's the solution? I want to introduce you to a product by Air Doctor that has captured the attention of established media outlets like CNN, ABC, and more. Air Doctor filters out 99.99% of dangerous contaminants so that your lungs don't have to. This includes pollutants such as allergens, pollen, pet dander, dust mites, mold spores, and even bacteria and viruses that have the potential to go on and make us sick. Air Doctor comes with a 30-day, breathe easy, money-back guarantee. So if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund minus shipping. Head to airdoctorpro.com and use code Cynthia. You'll receive up to $300 off air purifiers. Exclusive to podcast customers, you will also receive a free 3-year warranty on any unit, which is an additional $84 in value. Look at the special offer by going to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code Cynthia. I absolutely love my air filters. They're an integral component to ensuring that the air that my family breathes in our home is as safe as possible. Consuming Element on a daily basis is one of my favorite ways to take care of my health. And we know that by consuming proper amounts of electrolytes, it can contribute to quality sleep, which is critical to all of my perimenopause and menopausal patients and clients. We know that magnesium increases a neurotransmitter called GABA that is known for producing calming effects. And consuming adequate levels of sodium can help you sleep through the night because low sodium levels increase cortisol and adrenaline. Additionally, if you are intermittent fasting, it's important to understand that when you fast, two things can dehydrate you. Number one, if your insulin levels remain low, it can signal to our kidneys to excrete more sodium or salt, a process called naturesis. And as glycogen or stored glucose is broken down, the water left over from the glycogen breakdown is urinated out. So if you want to take care of your health in one of my favorite ways, you can consume Element electrolytes. My favorite flavors are grapefruit and citrus, but there are many others to choose from. And if you go to drinkelement.com/Cynthia, you can get a free sample pack to try them out on your own. Again, it's drinkelement.com/Cynthia for your free sample pack where you can try all of their flavors.
I couldn't agree more. One of my best friends from high school, who is 51, is still on oral contraceptives. And I actually had a conversation with her and I said, we don't even know if you're in menopause, because technically the average age of menopause here in the United States is 51. And, you know, she liked the convenience. I totally get it. There's no judgment, but we don't know where she is. And she said, what would I even do? Like, what are the tests I need to ask for? What are the things I need to do? And so we kind of dove down this rabbit hole of trying to look like, what's the research say? And it's kind of it's a total, pardon me, shit show. I mean, there is not enough research. I mean, when I wrote my book, I talked about these five phases of perimenopause, and it was like, that required a lot of effort to find this one study talking about the phases, like what happens in the beginning, what happens towards the end. And I agree with you that we are band-aiding so many of these symptoms instead of addressing the root cause. And to touch on the estrogen piece, you can be having bowel movements every day and still not be excreting your estrogen properly. And I say this from personal experience that, you know, I've done a couple Dutch, and people are pretty familiar with that test because they listen to the podcast. And, you know, I did it before I went on hormone replacement therapy. I did it when I was about 4 months in. And what was interesting to me was that clearly I was on not the right types of hormone replacement therapy, because all of a sudden I went from excreting my estrogen properly to not. And so a lot of it was determined by the products we were using, and I'm off of them now, and my estrogen metabolism is better. But because I was having a bowel movement every day, I assumed, oh, I'm getting rid of the excess estrogen. No, I wasn't. And so I think if anyone's listening and says, well, I don't get constipated, so I must be fine. No, that's not the case. So what are some of the tests that you like to use in your work with women right now that you feel like are beneficial for the perimenopausal woman? And especially those, like, I get DMs, I'm sure you get them too, How do I know if where I am if I have an IUD? How do I know where I am if I have an ablation? How do I know if I've had my uterus out, but I still have my ovaries? I don't even know how to ask, like really respond thoughtfully to those questions. And I'm sure you have some ideas, but I know that I get those questions almost every day.
I absolutely love that your listeners are asking these questions because that is key. You know, we finally need to start speaking up for ourselves. I would love to go back quickly and just talk about your friend, the birth control on the birth control pill. Oh my goodness. So the problem with the birth control pill, there's multiple problems, but we're on them for decades. And, you know, I'm an advocate of the birth control pill. That's how I didn't have another baby and made it through medical school, right? Let me put that disclaimer in there. You should use it if you need it for birth control. It's a good option, but you should have informed consent when you go on that birth control pill. You should know and be told that it is shutting down your own hormone production, your HPO axis. So your brain and ovaries are not talking to each other. Your brain is no, or your ovaries are no longer responding to things. They're kind of put in a sleep mode. That is why you don't get pregnant, because you don't ovulate. It also causes leaky gut, and it causes you to no longer absorb your vitamins and minerals effectively. So I see a lot of B vitamin depletion and protein depletion and all of these things. And B vitamins are actually needed to metabolize estrogens appropriately. So the other thing is it shifts your gut microbiome. So you have different bacteria living in your gut. And you mentioned you're pooping every day. So I'm so glad you pointed that out, because it's not just you getting rid of, you know, your stool evacuating, but there's certain bacteria that will cause you to cut the garbage tag off of those hormones that you're trying to get out of your system, and that will cause you to reabsorb them. So it's not just the physical movement or not. There's things going on microscopically that we need to be aware of. And so you can evaluate all of that with functional stool testing. It's pretty amazing. But what I see is women will go on the birth control pill either as a teen because their period is heavy and crazy and painful, which we could talk about all that. That's a whole nother episode. That's not normal. That needs to be addressed, not with birth control pills. Or you go on it for birth control and then you stay on it for the convenience, or your doctor keeps putting you on it to, you know, handle these heavy period symptoms, et cetera. Those are synthetic hormones. They do not send the same signal to your breast tissue and all the other receptors throughout your body that natural bioidentical hormones do. And so what we now understand is, even though it gets rid of your symptom, in other areas, it's doing you more harm than good. And so I would encourage women to only use it for birth control for the shortest amount of time necessary. You know, that's what we say for hormone replacement therapy. So the idea is all these synthetic hormones are completely safe for 20 or 30 years. And then as soon as you're done having periods, they're no longer safe. Like, everybody's got to get off them, shortest duration. And really the problem was the 20 to 30 years preceding you going into menopause. That is how cancer and disease develop. They don't develop overnight, you know? So having a 53-year-old woman go on synthetic hormones, that didn't cause the cancer. It was what was happening for those decades leading up to it. And I promise you that will not be addressed or researched or acknowledged, because imagine the lawsuits. Imagine the millions and millions of women put on birth control pills since the 60s. That would, like, our society would probably collapse, honestly. So it's not going to be addressed. It's up to us to acknowledge these facts and say, okay, is this safe for me? Do I want to continue on this? Am I willing to take that risk? You know, some people are starting to understand that, but it's important to, like, focus on your gut health, focus on your liver health, get your vitamin and minerals supplemented, because I guarantee you're depleted, and that's creating a vicious cycle. So when you take a synthetic hormone like estrogen or a synthetic progestin, your body is metabolizing it into a form we don't like right off the bat. You know, we see that all the time with oral estrogen replacement. So you can get bioidentical oral estradiol as a menopausal woman, but 30% of it gets converted to estrone in your gut before you even put it in your bloodstream and use it. So you're putting it into a form that is more likely to damage DNA and your cells and increase your risk of breast cancer before it even gets into your bloodstream. You know, it's these little nuances that your provider needs to know, and a lot of them don't. And so women are, you know, they're causing more harm than they are good because gynecologists are surgeons and they're not trained hormone experts. They're not learning this stuff. So it's really important for you to seek out alternative practitioners. I mean, I'm guessing that was your situation, right, yeah. Cynthia?
Absolutely. And it's interesting. I want to dovetail into the, I was reading some research about oral contraceptives that they even change the type of partners you would select. So maybe if you were not on oral contraceptives, you might be attracted to a different person, but because you were on these synthetic hormones, you end up coupling with maybe someone that you would not have otherwise chosen to be with. And that's really profound and powerful. And how many of my friends at the stage of life that I'm in, where we're starting to see people get separated and get divorced, you know, women who are now off of hormones and maybe they're looking at their partner and saying, you know, we're not as well matched as we thought we were. And it's because at the time, well, I'm sure it's many things, but one thing that could have contributed is that we are disrupting this normal physiologic, you know, whether it's pheromone production, et cetera, but that influence on the gut microbiome even impacts our ability to select the right partners. And I thought that was very, very telling. And I agree with you that even as a provider, I had to go outside the traditional medical model to get the kind of care that I wanted. And I'm so glad that you brought up the concept of informed consent, because how many of us don't even think about it? Whatever prescription we get, they might mention a couple side effects, but you're not really thinking like, truly, what am I consenting to for my body? One of the things I'm starting to see is women that were on long-term oral contraceptives, either to help with wonky periods or with contraception, later going on to developing osteoporosis a whole lot earlier because they've been in this low estradiol state when they were at peak bone and muscle mass building in their 20s and 30s. That's something, again, there probably more research needs to be done, but my N of 20 or 30 is that pretty consistently when I'm saying, you know, were you on oral contraceptives for a period of time, you know, when you were younger, almost all of us were. And I find that really, really interesting. I'm not referring to osteopenia because that's technically not even a diagnosis. If you've been told you have osteopenia, you should not be, you know, comparing your bone density at 50 to your bone density at 20. Like, that's not a reasonable comparison. So when you're looking or talking to women that have an IUD or they've had an ablation or they've had a hysterectomy and still have their ovaries, how do you help them understand where they are? If they're in perimenopause, like how do they know when they're done? Like, do you advocate looking at FSH? Do you recommend they seed cycle? What are the things that you kind of recommend or suggest? Because this is actually my own question. Because when women come to me, I'm like, I don't really have a great answer. So I'm hopeful that you will have a better one.
Yeah, I think it's really important, especially for the women you mentioned that are essentially blocking those symptoms. You know, symptoms are messages from your body. Your body's trying to tell you something. So now you have to find another way to understand what your body is saying. And so if you're not having a period because of intervention, because you have a hormonal IUD or you've had an ablation, then, or you've had a hysterectomy and you still have your ovaries, we have to try and find out, are you still cycling? Because you don't have to bleed to be cycling. Cycling is the communication between your brain and your ovaries, producing hormones in different amounts every day of the month to cause ovulation, to cause release of that egg for a potential pregnancy. And that will still happen if you don't have your uterus, but you still have your ovaries. And so I always encourage women to get in tune with their bodies and try to understand what they're doing at different times of the month. And it can take a few months, really, because we're trained from a young age to just ignore it, just figure out how to deal with it and move on. You know, my daughter just started her period. I'm sure she's super happy with me announcing this, but she was mortified and she was like, I'm not telling any of my friends. Like, that is how it is in America. We don't talk about it. We just cover it up. We're shamed, we're embarrassed, we're scared. And so that whole conversation has to change. But in the meantime, we have to do all the crap that was done to our, you know, way of thinking as women. So start getting in tune. When do I have energy? What days of the month? Like, write it on the calendar. When do I feel like, oh my gosh, I could go out and conquer the world? That's usually about, you know, 7 to 10 days long. When do I want to rest and take a nap and sleep in? When do I just need a massage? When does my body hurt? When is my brain fog kicking in? When do I want to have sex? You know, when I'm all of a sudden I'm interested in my husband for like 4 to 6 days of the month, where's that at? And really try to map that out and you will figure out where you are in your cycle. So the other piece of it is you can do ovulation predictor kits to see when are you ovulating. And that's another piece of the puzzle, or to take your temperature. You have to take it like before you even step out of your bed in the morning, like right away, because your temperature will go up 0.5 to 1 degree when you ovulate. And so all of these little pieces of information, you can kind of put them together and figure out where you are. So I know for me, like, I'll be tired and want to cry myself to sleep like the day before I start bleeding, and then the first day of my period, and then the second and third day, I'm like, let's kick ass and conquer the world. And I'm feeling amazing. I want to intermittent fast. I don't need food. I'm good to go. A few days later, I want to have sex again, and my libido's up, my testosterone's coming on, and things are good. Then I ovulate, my cervical mucus gets thicker, there's more moisture, all of that. And then, you know, about cycle day 27 or 26, I'm like, man, I don't want to do anything. Why am I trying to conquer the world? Like, I'm overwhelmed. I'm crying to my husband. And then it starts all over again. And it took me a long time to figure that out about myself. That's not something I learned as an OBGYN resident, unfortunately. And when I realized it, I started paying attention to my patients. And lo and behold, that is a common thing for all women. That is how we feel throughout the month based on our hormones cycling, because estrogen is our growth hormone. It makes us want to do stuff. And so estrogen comes in early in the month and we get going, we get hustling. When we ovulate, our body's like, she might get pregnant. We better hunker down, conserve energy, focus on that uterus in case that egg implants, you know? And so things turn down and it's focused on restore and restoration. And in the middle, when you're trying to ovulate and get pregnant, that's when the testosterone is high. And so I remember learning the little pictures of these levels going up and down in residency, but no one ever sat down and explained how women feel during this time and how to help them be vibrant and make the most out of it, like how they should be exercising and, you know, eating. And you've done an amazing job with that. And so has Better Body, Dr. Estima, like so many women are finally talking about this. And I would encourage women to embrace this and teach this to your daughters. Like, a new time is coming. We're no longer just going to be trying to get rid of our period. Like, that was super popular in the early 2000s. Seasonique came out. Let's not have a period for 3 months. Nobody needs a period. We don't want periods. They're bad news, you know? And it just further caused more shame and all, you know, more frustration. And that pill was horrible. Like, people were having breakthrough bleeding like you wouldn't believe. It caused a lot of emotional frustration, a lot of depression, anxiety, because when you mess with sex hormones, you're not just messing with your period. You're messing with how you feel as a person, how you function, your energy level, your immune system. It's all balanced by your hormones.
One of my favorite ways to take care of my health is to consider targeted supplementation. And one of my favorite supplements that I take on a daily basis is MitoPure. It has 15 years worth of research, 11 human clinical trials, 300 studies already on Urolithin A. And it is one of those supplements that can help support healthy aging, MitoPure is the first and only clinically tested, highly pure urolithin A postbiotic. And unlike dietary sources like pomegranate juice, MitoPure delivers efficacious levels of urolithin A. The soft gels combined are 1,000 milligrams, and the powder, which is my favorite, is 500 milligrams in each packet. I've seen significant increases in not only my strength in the gym, but also my VO2 max, which I recently had tested earlier this month. And we know that healthy aging is really dependent on the health of our mitochondria, which are the powerhouses of our cells. And every aspect of health and well-being is really dependent on mitochondrial health, whether it be our bodies, our immune systems, our brain, our gut, skin, muscle. We know that mitochondrial health is absolutely essential. MitoPure actually triggers our body's natural mitochondrial repair processes, rebuilding and replacing damaged mitochondria with new ones, which leads to increased cellular energy, as well as muscle strength and endurance. MitoPure is one of a kind. It's backed by science that I trust. It does what no other supplement can do, and I recommend you try it for yourself. To save 10% on your first purchase, go to www.timelinenutrition.com and use code Cynthia for 10% off your first purchase. Again, that's timelinenutrition.com and use code Cynthia for 10% off. Today's podcast is sponsored by NutriSense. It combines cutting-edge technology and human expertise so you can see how your body responds to different types of nutrition, stress, exercise, sleep, and where you are in your menstrual cycle in real time. And by pairing a continuous glucose monitor with their app and expert nutritional guidance, NutriSense can help you reach your health goals. And the best part is it's not just a program where they send you the CGM and you have to figure it out on your own. Each subscription plan includes 1 month of free expert nutritionist support. Your nutritionist will work with you one-on-one, interpreting your data and providing customized advice to help you reach your health goals. The last time I had my CGM on, my registered dietitian and I troubleshooted over some specific concerns that I had. And whether you're aiming to lose weight, stabilize your energy, or just feel better overall, NutriSense offers the guidance and support you need. And lasting sustainable change takes time and can be achieved through a longer-term subscription. That's why I encourage my patients and clients to consider 3, 6, or 12-month subscriptions where it's actually less expensive and allows you to not only achieve your goals, but also to ensure that you stick to your healthy lifestyle for the long term. As I've mentioned before, I have found the CGMs I have used through NutriSense to be incredibly insightful, specifically to carbohydrate tolerance. I would not have known that plantains spiked my blood sugar without this information. It's also been hugely helpful for tailoring to workouts and sleep quality. And so for me, even though I am metabolically healthy, I find the insights to be particularly helpful to tailor my lifestyle changes to my blood sugar. Visit NutriSense.io/EWP and use the code EWP for $30 off plus 1 month of free nutritionist support. Be sure to let them know you're a listener of the Everyday Wellness podcast when they ask you how you heard about them. This is one of my favorite ways to take care of my health and one of my top recommendations for all of my patients and clients.
And I think that's such an important shift in your perspective. I know for myself, I say now, I mean, now that I'm done having menstrual cycles, I now know more about the menstrual cycle than I ever did before. And I was like, right. How sad is that? And it really speaks to the fact that menstruation was kind of thought of as dirty and, you know, you don't talk about it and you're always making excuses for it. And, you know, like you mentioned, you know, creating contraception that, you know, de-obligates us from actually having something that should otherwise be pretty natural. And I'm always very transparent and tell people, I thought I had horrible PMS in my 20s. I didn't have terrible PMS. I had bad PMS, I put it in quotes, because I wasn't really having a menstrual cycle in between packs of pills, but I had awful PMS symptoms. And I didn't know that that wasn't normal for me until I went off the pill when my husband and I got married. And all of a sudden I was like, I actually don't have PMS. But it's because of these synthetic hormones, you know, disconnecting parts of my brain to my organs that's not, you know, functioning and optimally working. Do you suspect that one of the reasons why we don't talk about energy and sex drive and,
you know, cravings with our patients is that it's harder to measure. Do you think that has something to do with it? Because when I think about like, why hasn't the research really been done in this area, at least that I'm aware of, is it because it's considered to be a tougher, you know, variable to plan for? Like, I know I actually did a presentation last week in Salt Lake and I was talking about, I forget, it was from like 1973 to 1993, women were not allowed to be in any phase one clinical trials. And that has started to shift. And yes, that was over 30 years ago, but it shows you that there's not enough research being done on women because there's concerns that our menstrual cycle is too complicated. It's a variable they don't want to account for. And my hope is, you know, that our generation of women is going to ensure that, you know, my nieces and your daughter and all these other young people, that they're going to age and mature very differently than we did, with more information and more awareness and greater empowerment.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, you hit on some important points. And I want women to understand that the majority of studies that are done on women are done by drug companies in an effort to get rid of those symptoms for you. It's like, does this drug work for this symptom? That is what they're studying. They are not studying how can we get your body to be in homeostasis and function on its own. Those studies aren't being done because no one makes money off of you being healthy and not requiring medications and surgeries. Everything is very much focused on, did this surgery work for endometriosis? Did this pill work for, you know, your bleeding? So I want women to understand, like, you know, your doctor focuses on evidence-based medicine and makes all their decisions on evidence-based medicine. And the evidence is not there for women because the system is broken. So if very much frustrates me when my colleagues say what you're doing is not evidence-based. That is because it's never going to be studied until we shift how we view healthcare. I put those in quotes in our system. So you mentioned like it is hard to measure libido and things like that. But the bigger issue that I find is that you don't have time to talk to your doctor about that. You know, I got penalized for taking time with my patients. I had to sit in meetings every month with like three or four managers and be told that I'm not seeing enough patients. I'm not doing enough surgery. I'm not making enough money. I'm not doing enough deliveries. I promise you that all of your doctors, that is how it works, you know, unless they're in private practice, which is almost impossible in this day and age. So they're all hospital owned, salaried physicians being told how to treat you. And they are being told you get 15, 20 minutes, you know, you get 20 minutes if it's an entire annual exam. So you got to crank out the physical and find out how they feel and fix the problem in that 20 minutes. There's no time to talk about, are you moving your body? Are you going through a divorce? Are you having a midlife crisis? Are you eating garbage? Are you sleeping? None of that. And so we never really get to the root cause of the problem, not even to mention deeper issues like mold and Lyme and all those chronic things that don't get addressed, but like basic lifestyle stuff. So I say, don't even be mad at your doctor. They're just as broke as you. They're probably just as unhealthy and just as sick. You know, physicians and nurses are the most overweight, unhealthy profession there is because they don't have time to take care of themselves. So they can honestly not be an example for you as a patient. I know I was broken. You know, I was living on donuts and coffee and falling asleep at lunch, and yet people were coming to me with their health issues and I was giving bad advice. And so it's so broken. I don't even know where to start. That's why I'm just starting with the women, like seek alternative solutions. So what I say is ask why. Why do you want to give me this medication? How long do I need to take this for? If they don't have clear answers for you that sit well in your gut, don't take it. You know, I don't know about you, but using antidepressants for perimenopause, that's the new craze. You know, that is recommended by the American College of OBGYNs, by the North American Menopause Society, which, you know, I'm all board certified through these places. That is the standard of care. If I have a woman complaining of hot flashes and night sweats, I'm supposed to start her on Lexapro first line. That is what I'm supposed to do. And you know what that causes? More weight gain, more self-esteem issues, not wanting to be intimate with their husband. So then they, you know, spiral and feel 10 times worse. And then they can't get off the medication because it's impossible. It's so addictive. You have disequilibrium, or you feel like you've had, you know, alcohol to drink. You get all of these side effects. So, you know, just examples like that just infuriate me. And I just want to say, like, enough is enough. Stop with this pill for an ill. It's really harming women.
Well, and I think it's so important because you're being so transparent about your lack of ability to provide the kind of care that you know your patients deserve. I felt very similarly. I think most people know I worked in cardiology, and I used to call it the question that I would get asked as I was walking out the door. Now, the nurse practitioner service in my practice, if I was in hospital, I was managing all the patients. If I was in clinic, I was seeing hospital follow-ups, and usually the sickest of the sick people, because the docs didn't want to see them. They were like, go talk to the NP. And I loved my patients, but the handle on the door question always centered around sex. They wanted to ask me the questions because they weren't comfortable enough asking the cardiologist, which was generally a male. And I used to say to my husband, you know, kind of humorously, I would say the people that had enough courage to ask about their sex lives were never the people I would have assumed were having sex. So it just goes to show you, they were the ones that were courageous enough to have that discussion. And so I would always sit back down and have that discussion, because I kept thinking, if they're asking me in the cardiology office, it speaks volumes, because someone else isn't asking that question or answering that question for them. So I think that's absolutely critical. What's interesting, and I know we're going to talk about this in our episode that's upcoming, when we're talking about vasomotor symptoms, so those symptoms that women get where they feel like maybe they're burning from the inside out, they're having hot flashes. If you really look at the research, it's not a depression issue. It's generally a blood sugar dysregulation issue. And it's interesting, the leaner your body mass is, the less likely you are to experience these vasomotor symptoms. And it's actually protective against insulin resistance. But are we talking to our patients about that? No, we're prescribing medications because that is what we have been taught as clinicians, that a pill is going to fix that symptom. And obviously, goodness, I mean, I can't.
Well, I was just going to say, to add to that problem, insurance companies will not cover labs to be drawn if you don't have a diagnosis. So it's very common for your doctor to never check your hemoglobin A1C or your fasting insulin or any of these really important markers, because they're discouraged from doing so. They need a diagnosis, a reason for that reimbursement, or they get in trouble. They get letters from the insurance company. So there are well-meaning gynecologists out there who finally are understanding, or, you know, had their eyes opened like I did, but they're still trying to work within the broken system. And you can't, like, you really just can't. So don't even be mad at them. Don't even try to fight it and get angry, because if they say no, they can't do it, it's either because they're afraid of getting in trouble from their administrator or the insurance company, or they don't know how to interpret the results. That's my other key point I want women to understand, is as a physician, I was trained how to evaluate and treat disease. I was trained to look for disease. So when I ordered a hemoglobin A1C, if it was less than 7, I was happy as a clam. I was like, you're good to go. We'll see you next year. When in reality, you are sick. You know, 5.7 is pre-diabetes. Yet we say, yeah, you better work on your diet. We'll see you next year. Do we talk about the diet? No. Do we change anything? Do we send them to a nutritionist? Maybe if you're lucky and you have really good insurance and you're going to go see a dietitian who recommends the American Diabetes Association diet, which is garbage. I'm just going to be honest right now. You're still not going to, you know, get any help. So it's really important to listen to podcasts like this and hear the truth, because our system is broken.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Tabitha, this is the end of our part one. Let my listeners know how to connect with you, how to listen to your amazing podcast, how to find you on social media.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Go listen to the Gutsy Gynecologist show. I talk about all kinds of, you know, things covering women's health. It's not just gynecology, because we are more than our lady parts, right? But follow me on drtabitha.com. It's T-A-B-A-T-H-A, no I's. I'm on Instagram and TikTok at the Gutsy Gynecologist. So I hope you guys check it out.
Absolutely. Thank you again for coming on.
If you love this podcast episode, please leave a rating and review, subscribe, and tell a friend.